Thank you, Cindy. What a moving and lovely meditation. And makes me feel grateful for you. I'm glad to have you back here in person. And for your words. I mean, what a way of collecting up stories from your own life and also the things that we've been talking about and channeling them in some way, channeling the river in a certain way that gives it shape. And so, feeling very grateful. And as you were speaking, I thought of something finally to read here. It's just a very short quotation from Parker Palmer. Maybe you've heard it before. But, let me read it first. Vocation, he says, vocation is that place where our deep gladness meets the world's great need. Vocation is that place where our deep gladness meets the world's great need. Think about that intersection between what really deeply brings you joy and gladness and connection and meaning, the intersection between that place and the needs of the world. And those can be big or small. They can be the needs of a grandchild or, you know, something larger, but in one sense, what's larger than a grandchild, you know? But just think about that intersection. That's the place Parker Palmer says we find our vocation. There's a little more to the quote here. In that intersection of gladness and need, we can find a vocation that is not only fulfilling, but also sustainable. And maybe one more piece about a word like vocation. It comes from vox in Latin, which means voice. I know in our culture you hear the word vocation and you think it's your resume or something, or the thing you do for a living. Not really, not in the deepest sense. Probably what you did for a living is not your single point of gladness, of deep gladness. It might be if you're super lucky. But Parker Palmer is talking about vocation in the deeper sense. And that is in part what I'm trying to ask when asking the question, are we born for these times? Really? Are you born for these times? And it forces us to ask questions like, well, where is my deep gladness located? What am I passionate about? What do I care about? What moves me on the deep level? What is really naturally me? And how might that intersect with the many opportunities and challenges that we have in front of us? Because only that kind of intersection is sustainable in the long run. You know, you can get all motivated. I don't know if you ever went to camp when you were a kid, made all kinds of commitments. I went to Christian camp, so it's like, you know, every time we got saved and we're going to be missionaries and, you know, and then like next week we're like, let's smoke some weed or whatever. I mean, not me, other people, of course. There's that kind of enthusiasm, but Parker Palmer is talking about really how, I'm going to use a computer metaphor, which I don't even like that much, but how are you uniquely wired, or maybe a better way of saying is uniquely shaped? And those seats of joy and gladness and meaning and depth that are in there, they intersect with the world somewhere. And that's vocation. That's your voice. That's speaking into the world with your life. And that is rising to the challenge of being born for these times. It's not about like giving you a list of things that you ought to care about. I mean, that might be helpful because sometimes that's eye-opening. Sometimes we don't even know the things that we ought to be looking into, but it's not about that. That's an intellectual exercise. It is about exploring our depths and our passions and our loves, and then asking, how can that meet the world's need in some way for the time that I have here on earth, something like that. So what do I want to talk about today? I want to talk about something that I've been putting off for a while because it's complex and complicated. But I have a sense that part of the times that we find ourselves in, we're being forced to ask again, what do we mean by right and left? What do we mean by red and blue? I mean, these are now given as norms for this is the way the world is. It's divided up between red and blue, red states and blue states. And it's funny to me that a whole state can turn a color, you know? It's like, oh, it was blue, now it's red, you know? Okay. And we live in a highly charged environment. People keep saying, whether it's true or not, that it's more divisive than ever. But let's just say, we don't know if it's true or not, but that's what people are saying. And it's constantly being put in front of us. Right and left, red and blue, conservative and liberal, whatever kind of variation. And I want to talk about, I just want to ask, is there some kind of challenge in this, in the opposition of these poles that we're being asked to look at and rise up to? How do we hold these things? And more than that, what kind of community is this? How do we want to engage in that conversation between right and left? How do we want to hold ourselves in terms of posture? Not that we all have to be on the same page about everything, but my sense is that we have a kind of unique opportunity to look again at these things. And those of you who have been around for a while know that words like liberal or conservative or Democrat or Republican, they change over time. Wouldn't you agree? I remember always hearing when I was a kid, Jerry Falwell, my dad worked for Jerry Falwell, that when he first started off as a pastor, he was a registered Democrat. So you say, well, what changed? So we know these things are in flux, is the simple way of saying it. And what are we being asked to look at now? And do you want to live in a world that is, in a country that tries to put the pedal down on the division at all times? That's certainly what the mainstream culture is about right now. And let me add one more piece. I'm going to say something. You know, I come from more of a Jungian perspective. And Jungians, I'm not a Jungian. Even Jung said, what did he say? He said something hilarious. He's like, thank God I'm Jung and not a Jungian. So, but anyway, they love the poles. They love the opposition. They love the opposition of things. And I'm more, that's more of my disposition. So I like the opposing poles. And I'm not trying to say you need to always be in the middle. I mean, that what would that mean exactly? Archimedes, that famous image, you know, Archimedes needed a lever to move the world and a place to stand. You know, he's not like, well, I'm just going to move it with my general thoughts. Okay? A lever and a place to stand. And you do need to find a lever and a place to stand. With all kinds of things, correct? It's good to say, I stand here, even if you're standing with a certain amount of openness or a listening ear to other ways of being in the world, something like that. So that's the terrain I want to roam around in. I'm not going to now tell you what you ought to think. I'm just saying, I think it's a valuable question. And I want to start with two kind of interesting things. One comes from depth psychology, and it goes something like this. As we get older, part of maturity is to develop what's called the inferior function. And it's as simple as saying, develop the opposite pole. It's part of how you recognize a maturing adult. A good example is extroversion, introversion. Extroversion and introversion seems to be mostly innate. Mostly nature, not nurture. Although the environment can sometimes affect people. In fact, in our culture, we have a lot of what depth psychologists call, it's a more clever term. I'll just give you my crass term, which is false extroversion. People act extroverted because our culture is more extroverted. Like we teach kids, look them in the eye, shake their hands, you know. That's the way you should be. That's an extroverted bias, and our culture is biased in that sense. But anyway, part of maturity does look like developing the inferior function. Now, that's very interesting because that tells us something. Which is better, extroversion or introversion? All the introverts will say, well, introversion. I don't know what the extroverts would say. But it's not a question that's even like worth asking, right? It's like, well, okay, well, both are important. And we don't want to get too locked into any one way of being. And that's the development of the inferior function. And actually, whole cultures can go through cycles like this. My opinion, and the opinions of Ken Dobson, that COVID-19 is a kind of cultural opportunity to develop the inferior function of introversion. We call that social distancing and isolating. And you can see that our extroverted culture freaks out that that's a possibility. Like, my life is over because I don't get to do the thing out there that I want to do. It's just a cultural opportunity to develop the inferior function. Anyway, why am I saying that now? Because introversion and extroversion, I think, is one of the most simple ways of describing there are different kinds of people who live in our country, who look at the world and experience the world differently than the way I do. We have somehow forgotten that that is even a value, that other people might see the world differently than I do. So this is a tiny window into some deeper things. Now, the other thing I want to mention is something called the Big Five personality test. Are you familiar with it? If you're not, don't take it right this second because I want to finish my talk, but go home and take it. You can find free versions of it on the internet or pay a little bit. It's now replaced. It's the industry standard if you want to take a personality test. It's replaced the Myers-Briggs, really, because for a variety of reasons. And in some ways, it's simpler. I'm going to give you the Big Five, if I can remember them all. The Big Five. Openness. Okay, openness. Conscientiousness. Agreeableness. There's one I always forget. Maybe I wrote it down. Extroversion. How could I forget that? And neuroticism. Okay, those are the Big Five. So I'll go through them again. Conscientious, openness, agreeableness, extroversion, and neuroticism. Neuroticism means one's capacity to be affected by negative emotion. That's really all that means. So if a neurotic person, I know it's not really used that way, it's just someone who is affected by negative emotion. Someone who's less neurotic is less affected by negative emotion. And you see this like, you know, if you have kids that grow up in the exact same environment with the exact same kinds of things and they respond very differently to negative emotion in the same family. And you say, how is that? Well, because the Big Five. Because people seem to be born with different dispositions. And these are all on a scale, each one of these things. Extroversion is a scale. Introversion is not in there, but it's implied in the scale of extroversion, basically. Openness is a scale. You can be more or less open. You can be more or less conscientious. You can be more or less agreeable. And you'll know when you meet someone who's less agreeable. You'll say, oh, I imagine where they'll fall on this particular scale. And you know when you're with someone who's very agreeable. You know, they're just up and like, what can I do? And, you know, any criticism is like, oh, I see your point. Yes, definitely. You know, so that's agreeable. And anyway, I don't want to go through all five. But one of the things that's happening, and this is fairly new research, is that there's a correlation between how you score on the Big Five and your political positions. Now, that makes sense, doesn't it? But we don't really like that, really, because it's sort of like saying, wait a minute, people have political opinions or dispositions is a better way to say it than opinions, because opinions, you would have to go issue by issue, but political dispositions, and we would say, they're born that way? That makes us a little uncomfortable. I should say it makes me uncomfortable. So I'm going to give you my bias for a moment. And you'll see if you've ever had this bias. Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. My bias went something like this, that spiritual growth or evolution of consciousness, if I want to sound super fancy, looks generally like moving from right to left. That's my bias. Now, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right. I have some suspicions that I'm not right. But that was generally what I thought. Why did I think that? Well, that's complex, but I also grew up in a very rigid, religious, fundamentalist environment. So what does growth look like? Well, not becoming more of that, but exiting scene left. Okay? And therefore I've grown and I've matured, and everyone else will do that. And of course, that's what's happening in the US, right? Ever since the 1960s, everything just to the left and to more bliss and openness and false, correct? So you can test your own bias and say, is that the way I see things or is it not? And what comes on just the other side of that question is something like, well, is there value in different dispositions in society, in culture, between right and left, between conservative and liberal? And if there's value in either side, how are we going to move forward? Because right now we're not moving forward as if there's value on either side, really. Are you? I'm not. I would rather just say, I'm going to double down exactly where I am and this will all go away. It's not going away. It's simply not. And I think, for me at least, I'll tell you my experience of when Trump was elected. I was sitting there watching television and I kept changing channels because I thought, well, maybe the story is different on a different channel. And then I would go back and I'd be like, okay, well, maybe it's the radio, or maybe it's the internet, you know. The Huffington Post was so far off, I never read it again, honestly. So my feeling once I realized that Trump was going to be the president of the United States, it was a feeling, but it was almost like a thought, as if God said something to me. I don't I'm not making that claim, but it was almost like words. And here was what I felt was said to me. You don't know very much about this country. And I was like, oh, okay. And that seemed true. And really, the Trump era, I think maybe we'll look back and it will be something like a hinge, like a pivot point of some way. Now, I'm not a prophet. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. But there does seem something important that surfaced with him that hasn't gone away, if you haven't noticed. So that feeling, though, I've been carrying since that moment. I don't really know very much about what's going on, about who lives here, why they live here, what people really think, what they believe. I had been living basically in a bubble of my own making, and it cracked it, at least for a time being, for the time. So, okay, I'm not done with my thought on the Big Five. I'm going to be even more specific. What are the determinants in people's political dispositions and the Big Five? It's actually quite simple, and it's related to two of the Big Five more than anything else, and that is one's degree of openness and one's degree of conscientiousness. Okay? Openness, you can add words like creativity is often associated with openness. Openness to new ideas, openness to relationships, other people, these kinds of things. These are all determinants. And you can be, you know, higher or lower. It's one of the ones that you can do something about. Neuroticism is harder to do something about. But you can, all of these you can tweak a little bit. But primarily it's a disposition. So if you're high in openness, guess where you'll probably fall in the political spectrum? Left or right, you tell me. All right. And if you're high in conscientiousness, where are you going to fall on the political spectrum? Yeah, mostly on the right. And this is what's so surprising about the Big Five. This statistic seems to be about right down the middle of human beings. They tend to fall either higher in openness, sometimes lower in conscientiousness. That's where I fall. So I score very high in openness and unbelievably low in conscientiousness. That's why if you've emailed me and I haven't emailed you back, that's why. Don't blame me. It's my Big Five, all right? I'm like 2% in conscientiousness, and I'm not exaggerating. That means, by the way, I would make a horrible manager. Put me in middle management, the company will just collapse, you know? Because I will think, well, maybe we should reinvent the whole system after just reinventing it last week, because that's what gives me energy. That's my disposition. I have more of a creative approach. When I was 8 years old, I said to myself and no one else, I'm going to be an artist. I wasn't even that good at drawing, and I didn't even know what it meant, and I wasn't thinking I'm going to make a living. I just thought, that's the way I'm oriented in the world. But I wasn't thinking, how can I get good grades? It's not a thought that ever entered my mind. The other day, my wife and my son were talking about how grades used to be, and what they used to have, the A plus. Now they don't even have A's or B's. They have some other letters. I don't even know what they are. I got an M. Okay, great. Sounds cool. But anyway, my wife was saying, well, it used to be that 97 point something or other was an A plus, and the only number I remembered was 59.5 was in the D range. So I was like, yes, nailed it. Okay. Now, I want you to come back to conscientiousness and openness, because if one of the things I'm really asking myself, if this is really true, and people's dispositions really translate into political positions and ideologies and so forth, how am I going to treat another person? Am I going to treat them as if they're stupid and they don't know what they're talking about and they are not evolved and, you know, righteous like me? After all, apparently I have a halo behind me at all times. So, or am I going to say, this disposition is valuable in some way? When I cut my finger off, I went to the hospital. And I don't know if you know this or not, but hospitals are very full right now and extremely understaffed. The nurse who helped me said there were 18 positions open on her floor. She had to leave for a code blue. Someone died in the middle of the sort of ER situation. So, now, though hospitals have problems and they're very understaffed, I still was able to be seen and x-rayed and sewed up. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. And cleaned up. And I didn't die. And I didn't get an infection. Somebody set that up who was high in conscientiousness. They didn't say, hey, we're just going to treat each individual case just like, we'll sort of go with the flow and we'll see what happens. You know, maybe we'll do this. Maybe we'll try something experimental. Maybe if we just didn't do anything right now, let's just see what happens. No, you don't want someone who's extremely creative running an ER. Okay? And you know that. I mean, just like that makes sense. Or just like, this is a question in the back of my mind, because there is a kind of rural urban division in our country right now, and it does tend to reflect kind of the left-right divide. But if you think about, my best friend when I was a kid, when I lived in Virginia, was a farmer, and I think about him sometimes. And farming, you have to be pretty high in conscientiousness to be a farmer. You're not going to say, hey, let's reinvent the tractor this year. You know, but I would. I would think, what if we just tried something new? That's why my garden, I am not exaggerating, I have tried something new every single year I've had a garden. I'd be like, maybe I'll do raised beds. Maybe I'll do rows. Maybe I'll do non-till farming, otherwise known as weeds. Okay? Now, The farmer down the street who I was working with does his garden the exact same way every single year. And you take a wild guess who has more produce. So all I'm saying is that there's value in the disposition, in these dispositions. And it might be time for us not to drop that we have political opinions. We ought to say, this is my lever and a place to stand, and I want to engage in conversation, but not to treat the other side as if they're idiots, or if they have no place, or that they're just going to go away. They won't go away. Why? Because people keep having babies. And when people have babies, they come out in different ways, and the dispositions are different. And maybe a word like being inclusive. By the way, this is one of the things that I was drawn to when I came to C3. I was like, oh, I want to be a part of an inclusive, you know, spiritual community. But you also want to say inclusive of what? You know, it's like it's a trap. It's a trap in the sense of, well, we'd like to be inclusive with these kinds of things, but maybe not with these kinds of things. And maybe that's good trouble to be in. I mean, you want to have values that give you trouble, not just pat you on the back all the time. So yeah, it's a good place to be in. But maybe it is time to say, all right, what do I hear beneath the surface of the other side? And is there any value in the tension between these things? Because guess what creative people need, or people who are high in openness? They need something to push against. And what does a system need that runs pretty well? Well, it's not going to run well for that long, and it's going to need someone who's high in openness from time to time to say, this isn't working, correct? I don't know if I'm not, you know, peddling politicians right now, but do you know Andrew Yang? You know him? I mentioned it a few weeks ago. He left the Democratic Party. And he's started his own party, and he wants to run on a ticket where there's a Republican and a Democrat on the same ticket. See, I don't know if that's going to work, but part of me says that is someone who is saying, I'm born for these times, and I want to try something different. Because what's happening now is not working. And he's an odd mixture of kind of conscientiousness and openness. He's a highly successful business person, so he's not just like painting in his garage, all right? But he's also high enough in openness where he's like, it's time to try something different with the system. Anyway. I'm just going to count the number of points on here. 11, and I made 2 of them. And that's all I'm going to make. Because my finger really hurts. I want to read Parker Palmer's quote again. And then, John, you can play some songs. Vocation, your voice, your way of being, your disposition, your intuitions, your soul. I love the word soul. Your deep shape, your vocation. Is that place where our deep gladness, meets the world's greatest need. There are loads of opportunities and challenges. And I actually see, part of the reason why I want you to read the newsletter, is many of you are doing this very thing. You're finding your place of gladness, and you're finding the place where that intersects with the needs of the world. In that intersection of gladness and need, we can find a vocation that is not only fulfilling, but also sustainable. Thanks for listening.